Welcome back. We are on episode 3 of Corinth in Your Car. My name's Josh, the associate minister at Corinth Christian Church. And today we got Luke in the room with us. Luke, want to say anything? Hello?
Yes, I will say hello.
All right, hello. And we are missing Adam, our senior minister this week. He's dropping off his daughter at college. And so that's such a bittersweet moment, I bet, for him. But we'll get more back into this later, but just talking about the hands of the leader, which was the sermon yesterday, and his hands are literally unloading luggage and driving a car and commissioning a daughter to the next stage of life. So that's pretty fun. Hey, on the front end, I thought it would be fun talking about the hands of the leader. That was the sermon yesterday. A couple of things you enjoy doing are making coffee and playing disc golf. And so I'm sure if people have ever heard you speak before, you've probably spoken about those two things, but those are two things you do with your hands. So, man, what do you love about coffee and what do you love about disc golf?
I mean, so really what's not to love about either of those things? They consume a lot of my time and energy, because they're just very enjoyable things. And so I even remember, a couple months ago, you and I were walking back into the church from like a staff lunch or something like that. And I just said to you, like, I just really want to make a cup of coffee right now.
Yeah, like, even if I don't drink it.
Right,
yeah.
Even if I don't drink it, I just want to make a cup of coffee right now, because the process that I go through to make a coffee is just a super enjoyable one. And you know, if I started to explain it, all of you listening would start to maybe use the S word for me, the coffee snob. I prefer the word connoisseur, but whenever you're slicing apples and oranges, it kind of all ends up being the same thing. But yeah, man, coffee is so much fun to mess with and to make with your hands. And I always like to say, just in general of the snobby conversation, that the best part of waking up is Folgers in the trash. And so if you want to be into coffee like I'm into coffee, go get yourself a nice bag of beans, grind them up fresh, use your hands to measure the grams with the scale, use your gooseneck kettle, pour it over something, and man, it'll be a good morning for you to start your day that way. But yeah, man, the coffee is good stuff.
And you just finished your first cup of Coffee Camper roasted beans. So they've always, you know, last several years, they've had a nice coffee shop there in downtown Monroe, but they recently started roasting their own beans, right? So,
yeah, that's I was talking to the owner, and her name's Crystal, and she was telling me that the bags that they have there on display, they're under the name Caption, and that was the first time I saw the bags. And so I was just asking, I've never heard of Caption. Where'd you guys get these beans from? And then they were like, oh, that's us. I was like, oh, cool. Sweet. So I ended up buying a bag and making it fresh this morning before the podcast, and I should be ready to go because I've got the coffee in me.
Yes, sir. I'm enjoying the remnants as well. You made a whole Yeti, and so I'm getting a second cup of coffee today. It's good.
Two cups already.
We're ready to go. So disc golf, something else you do with your hands. And so explain to our listeners kind of what that is if they don't know, and then why it's so enjoyable for you.
Yeah, disc golf, here's kind of the idea. It's golf, but instead of hitting a ball with a club into a hole, you throw a frisbee into a basket. But it works the same way. You can get a birdie, par, or if you're like me, a bogey or double bogey. And that's the way it goes. Super fun. Now, I've gotten so much into it again that the words snob could come into play. Another story from our staff. We were in Savannah, Georgia for a little conference, and we were driving to the meeting, and we passed a golf course.
I remember this, yeah.
I looked out the window, and without even, I didn't even say this on purpose. This is just what slipped out of my mouth, because this is how I have to differentiate between things now. I said, hey, look, there's a ball golf course.
A ball golf course, yeah.
Because there are so many different types of golf. I mean, you do the ball golf, the disc golf. There's even foot golf. I don't know if you've ever played foot golf before.
It's like soccer?
Yeah. You're pretty much just like, they make these bigger sized holes in the ground, and you're just like kicking and putting with your feet with a size 3 soccer ball.
That'd be fun.
Lots of fun. But disc golf is definitely the one that takes the cake for me. I have an official PDGA card.
That means he's a professional, ladies and gentlemen.
That does not mean I'm a professional. And so, in fact, I have actually made money playing disc golf. Now, not profit, but so whenever you enter into the PDGA, you end up playing in like some tournaments and stuff like that. And of course, anytime you do any sort of tournament, you've got the chance to like buy in and stuff like that. And so they have these things called CTPs, similar to ball golf. And
closest to the pin, CTP.
Right. So CTP.
Okay, gotcha.
So they'll have special holes out in these tournaments where if you at the end of the day are the one who landed your disc closest to the basket, you get to cash in. And there was one tournament I played in at Little Mulberry Park. Nope, sorry, scratch that. It's not Little Mulberry. It was Parker's Pasture in Covington, Georgia. And got closest to the pin.
Awesome.
Cashed in like $40. And so
nice.
I am making money playing disc golf now. $40 I have made.
We're not going to ask how much you have invested.
No, how much money I've spent on bags and discs and league fees and all that sort of stuff. But I have made $40. So there you go. It's worth it.
Well, you know, I've heard people talk about every leader kind of needs their sailboat project, you know?
Sure.
And for people, that's just to explain what's going on there is something that's not your profession, but something that you really enjoy doing. And so you don't always just get so focused on your job, you end up going crazy. But something, yeah, like coffee and disc golf for you is a lot of fun. So
yeah, it's a great time to get out and just do something else, have mind kind of taken off some other things. I always tell people I feel the most like Jesus whenever I play disc golf, because there's a story in the New Testament where Jesus actually curses at a fig tree because it doesn't produce any fruit. And occasionally, whenever I play disc golf and I throw my disc square into the trunk of a tree,
there you go.
I want to be yelling at that tree like Jesus was. So maybe when you play disc golf, you can look a little bit like Jesus.
There you go. Hey, we referenced a while ago, Adam is out this week and dropping off young daughter Jaden at college. Exciting times, bittersweet times. If any of our listeners have kind of crossed that stage of life, they know exactly what's going on. Some of our listeners might have gone through that. They've been the one that was, you know, they were the one that was dropped off. So got me thinking a little bit about college and what it was like for me, some of my favorite memories, but also just what I learned. So as you think about your, you know, years in college, what was it for you that was fun, but it also was some development in leadership? That's what we're talking about, you know? So explain to us some of that.
Sure. I mean, so if you've heard or been around any of us for a while, you'll probably know that a lot of us attended a Bible college in Joplin called Ozark Christian College. And man, like we do not have enough time in a podcast for even just you and I, Josh, to sit down and to tell all of the stories and to think through all of the things that we learned or think through the character that we developed in that amount of time. First story that just like immediately pops into my mind. So college dorm, bunch of guys. I lived in Strong Hall, and pretty much anytime you get a bunch of guys together and they're bored,
Competition breaks out.
And so yeah. We had these giant sumo suits. I don't know if you've ever seen the sumo suits. We had two of them. And so I'm like doing my homework in my room, and up above me, I just hear a ton of screaming and yelling and like the pitter-patter of feet from the floor above. And I'm like, well, forget about this homework. I'm going to check this out. And so yeah. I walk up, and in the hallway of one of the dorms, the wall is lined with all of the guys, and on one end of the hallway is one man wearing a sumo suit, and on the opposite end is another man wearing a sumo suit. And what we had decided to do, I guess, was that somebody would say go, and they would take off running as fast as they can until they met in the middle, and whichever person, you know, like whoever hit the other person down won the round, and everybody would go crazy because it's a couple of college guys doing sumo suit wrestling. And so I walk up there and like immediately one of the guys that I was friends with, his name was Alex Blakely. He like saw me get up there and he's like, oh, I got next and it's going to be against Luke. So I get into this sumo suit and I don't know how long they had been doing this before I got there, but it was the nastiest thing I had ever put
on.
Like it was just like, you imagine how many guys are sweating in that nasty little sumo outfit. So I get in. And Alex gets in, and I had just gotten up there, and so I wasn't sure, like, if there was any etiquette for this. Like, you know, like, whenever we meet in the middle, are you allowed to lower your shoulder, or are you just kind of, like, you know, hitting them straight up? And so I was, like, deciding to be a little bit gentlemanly, and so I was just going to run and hit him straight up. But this man, he lowered his shoulder, hit me right in the head, and I woke up about 20 seconds later to a bunch of screaming guys going nuts because of a massive sumo suit hit. So that's the first story that pops into my mind. If you can even imagine in your mind what it looks like for 40 young men to be going nuts over stuff like that.
Now, you were an RA in the dorm, a resident assistant, and was this jousting time or the sumo suit time when you were an RA?
No, this was this was much earlier on. I was an RA in my senior year. I think this jousting or sumo thing was kind of like at the beginning of my sophomore year.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So we got whipped into shape. There are many other stories. You know, the RA even, you know, this is something that I learned even as a leader. So get to my senior year and I'm RA. And one of the things that's significant about Ozark is that whenever you become the RA of the dorm floor that you're living on, yes, you have like the typical stereotype college RA responsibilities of like making sure people are taking care of the facilities and quiet hours and all that sort of stuff. But then there's this other aspect to it as well, where you want to do your best as the leader of the floor to provide a Christ-based community, to really minister to a lot of the guys as they kind of develop for ministry training. And I knew that community was a big part of that. In fact, community is a word that I'll often come back to whenever I talk about Ozark. And so we had gotten to the point on our floor where there was just a lot of closed doors and people were going into their rooms and doing homework and not really interacting with a lot of people. And I wanted to try to change that as the RA. And so I had this idea that I got from a movie that I cannot in good conscience actually recommend. but I got this idea that we were going to play as a dorm floor, we were going to play tag for an entire month.
Awesome.
Right. And so it was, you can tag anybody on the floor at any time in any way that you want to, like as hard as you want
even
to tag
class?
Them, like even in class, anytime you can tag them, anytime you want, as long as you're bold enough to do it, you know?
Sure.
And so the rules were that there were no tag backs. And then in addition to like no tag backs, kind of the way that it worked was that we'd play for a whole month and whoever was it at the end of the month, whenever the clock struck midnight, would have to like face a punishment that we all decided upon together or something like that. And so there was one other rule, and it was that you couldn't hold on to the tag for like more than 24 hours, right?
Gotcha.
So because like some people are going to like keep the tag and then kind of kill the game and then be strategic about what they're trying to do. Got to keep it going, right? So we were having some fun with that. And the whole point, like as the leader of the floor, what I was trying to do with this game was to create some community, right? Like we're going to have fun together. We're going to play together. We're going to laugh together. And it started off really, really fun, where, you know, guys are chasing each other through the cafeteria at lunchtime. There was one guy who worked at the pharmacy at Walmart. And so, like, one of the guys who was about to tag him, like, went to the pharmacy at Walmart and, like, went and tagged him while he was working. Another guy was delivering pizzas for Pizza Hut. I don't know why I just emphasized the hut so much, but Pizza Hut. And one of the guys ordered a pizza to a different address and like,
oh, so he wouldn't know.
So he wouldn't know that it was him. Right. And so the guy walks up, here's your pizza. That'll be $12.50. Okay. Thank you. And also tag you're it, you
That's
know,
great.
Right there while he's doing it. There was one, where, at Ozark, sometimes guys will take like little preaching ministries.
Sure.
And so there was one where a guy, it was at a small country church. He took one of his buddies up there with him for Sunday morning worship. And guy got up into the pulpit and was about to preach, and his buddy like walked up before he started preaching right there in front of the church, tag you're it, the beginning of the sermon, the guy had to kind of explain what's going on. And so just a lot of fun, a lot of silly stuff, created a lot of laughs. But then it quickly turned into, what's that word whenever you get a bunch of guys together?
Oh, a competition. Yeah, competition. Absolutely.
And so, like, alliances were being made and betrayals were happening. And so we get to this last night of the game of tag. And it's a Thursday night, is the end of the month. And Thursday night at Ozark is like floor Devo time.
Yeah.
And so your curfew isn't like 1 a.m. like normal. It's actually 10 p.m. And you're required to like just get together with the guys on your floor and have a little Devo time. And so I decide, okay, well, we're going to get permission and we're going to go off campus for floor Devos. We go to Sonic on 7th Street in Joplin. And everybody kind of orders some food, and it's about like 10:30 by the time that that happens. And I lead a little bit of a quick Devo. I say a prayer, and we've got an hour and a half left with this game of tag. I was it, and I did not want to lose at all.
Yeah,
and
who does?
Right. So I like said amen. And then as soon as I said amen, I tagged someone else and then stole the car keys from one of the other guys on the floor, got into his car, and I drove off.
So you committed Grand Theft Auto, basically.
I committed Grand Theft Auto to win this game. And there was a couple of guys who got in a car and started like chasing me around Joplin, and other guys were like making a break for it to the park and like running on foot and all that sort of stuff. And I don't even know all of the stories from what happened that last night, because everybody went everywhere. And so I ended up like picking up one of my buddies like in the middle of the street, like head past him, and he's walking by. I like rolled down the window. He's like, "All right, are you it? If you're it, I'm going to be really mad." He's like, "No, I'm not it." And so I took a chance and I let him in, and he wasn't. So we were good there. And like, I wanted to win so bad that I drove around Joplin for an hour and a half. I just like stayed in the car and drove around Joplin for an hour.
Not your car.
Not my car. Yeah.
Still not your car.
Still not my car. And drove around. And then at 12 o'clock, I pulled into the parking lot of Strong Hall. And I like get out and I'm like super excited because I just won the game. I didn't lose. This was an amazing community opportunity for everybody to laugh and have fun, and I won, and so it's going to be great. And so I'm like walking down the stairs back to the first floor of the dorm, and I'm like expected to be greeted by cheers and by like, "Oh man, Luke, we had so much fun. That was a great idea. This was incredible." And I was expecting to receive some sort of praise for the great leadership that I had displayed with all of this. But what I actually got met with was just a bunch of like disappointment because the guys were just like honest with me, which is what I needed. And they were like, "We thought this was going to be a fun thing where we all got to play together. And it turned into this. You were so caught up in winning that you completely didn't really care, you know, about anything else." And so it got to the point to where I thought I was doing this great thing, but because of my own selfishness, in order to win, what actually ended up happening was it harmed the community more than it helped the community.
Sure.
And so the leadership lesson I learned in that moment was, first, well, just don't be selfish. But then two, one of the things that you have to do as a leader over and over and over again is just say, "I'm sorry."
Sure.
Like, "I'm sorry." Like, you know, that was a phrase that I said a lot over the course of my time as an RA for a whole year, is just like, "Man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." And whether or not the apology was warranted or not, like, it's just like whenever you are leading a group of guys and the expectations that they have for you are not met, it's just, "Man, I'm sorry."
Yeah. I think at least in my life, my leadership, I'm able to learn a lot more if I'm willing to admit it, you know, when I fail. Then when I succeed, you always learn from those failures. And really that story is a great kind of segue to the sermon from yesterday, talking about the hands of the leader. Did a great job communicating that, just serving with open hands, and what it takes to be a leader that uses their hands to lead their people, their families, their teams, their businesses, all of that. And so I appreciated what you said a lot, and I hope everyone else did as well. For those that maybe missed it, or even if they heard it, let's go ahead and jump into kind of what we heard yesterday. Just give us a 2 to 3 minute sort of recap of what the message was that we need to hear.
Sure. So week 3, lead like Jesus, the hands of the leader. Before that, we had talked about the heart, and then last week, the head, and kind of moving on to the hands. The whole idea is if you want to lead like Jesus led, then you've got to serve like Jesus served, or you've got to serve with open hands. And so the way that I kind of kicked it off was pointed out that there are three types of different like leadership styles when it comes to the motion or the position of the hand. One of them is the pointing finger leader.
And this we've all seen this, right?
This is the type of leader that just not only holds the finger up and says, I'm number one, this is all me, but then also immediately starts to point and direct, and you need to do this, and you need to do this, and they're just kind of pointing and bossing around. In fact, that's probably the most common image of leadership in our culture. It's just, I am the leader, and now I get to tell you what to do. And really, that is a leadership style that Jesus didn't buy into. That's not what he did. Their other type of leadership style is the closed-fisted leader. And that's the leader that is like thinking through, I'm at the top and I'm going to keep all of my knowledge to myself so that nobody threatens my position. Mm. That's not what Jesus did either. Jesus was the type of leader that led with an open hand. He led with an open hand that said, I'm going to use my influence to develop my team, and I'm going to empower them and serve them. And that's the type of leadership that Jesus used to change the world. And so conversation, if you want to lead like Jesus, you must serve with open hands. And so what we did was we went through the story of Peter and kind of talked through Jesus's relationship with Peter in regards to this whole idea of what it means to be a servant leader. There are three things at play. When Jesus calls Peter, come follow me, I'll make you a fisher of men. It's a clear call. He's not just calling him to something random. He's communicated a clear call for what he has in mind for Peter. And then once that call is accepted, he begins to develop Peter. And part of that development means that he's praising him for when he gets something right and correcting him for when he gets something wrong and empowering him to be able to do the things that Jesus was doing. You know, I gave the example of walking on water, but there's other examples about Jesus sending the disciples out in order to preach the gospel even before Jesus had been to the cross and been raised from the dead. He's empowering them and giving them the chance to do what Jesus was doing. And then in addition to empowering, he's just continuing to help them at every single point, help them develop. It's really hands-on. I'm going to guide my followers, specifically Peter in this example, I'm going to guide them into the person that I want them to be, into the leader I want them to be. And then once they're there, the final kind of point is that it's the commission. And so Jesus gets to the point where he's developed Peter, and now he has to send him out. And so he does, and that's exactly what happens. Peter is sent out, and then Peter preaches the first Christian sermon, 3,000 people baptized. Peter heals a man at a gate. Peter is asked to stop preaching, and he's like, nah, I'm going to keep doing it anyway. All this sort of stuff, Peter is able to execute what he was called to because he had a leader that served with open hands. And so a servant leader is always looking to train up others. That's what Jesus did. That's what we're called to do.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I appreciated that message and that challenge yesterday. And really, part of why I loved so much what you did is because it was the story of Peter. And Peter is just a fun character in the Bible. I believe something that the book Lead Like Jesus was pointing out was that outside of Jesus in the New Testament, Peter's name is like the most often name written. He's the character that is, you know, kind of told the most stories about and things like that. And I think it's just because he's probably so relatable to us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There are, you know, I know Adam has used this before in sermons. He has the foot-shaped mouth. So he's said lots of things that, oh, stuck my foot in my mouth, you know. And he had some high highs and he had some low lows for sure. But I think it's just a testament to what Jesus does with people. Like, even in their successes and failures, it's really not about their successes and failures. It's about what Jesus is doing through them. And, I mean, he's calling all of us. But Peter's relatable. And so, do you have any kind of favorite Peter stories from the New Testament?
Sure. I think so. Joke comes to mind with just what I think is one of the most powerful and impactful for me. But it's a silly joke. The punchline is that Peter and Jesus were one time playing this lively game of basketball, and Peter denied Jesus three times. You know, at the rim, blocked him. But
I got
you know,
it. Yeah,
it's not that good. It's not that good of a joke. But yeah. But that's kind of the one that I always come back to is the night that Jesus is taken by all of these religious leaders, and he's been put on this trial the night before his crucifixion. And Peter, you know, was already told by Jesus, "You're going to deny me three times." And Peter's like, "No, I'm never going to do that." Right. And so Peter then follows Jesus and kind of hangs out in the behind the scenes of this trial. And three times, sure enough, he's asked, "Are you one of his disciples? Surely you're one of his followers." And Peter's like, "No, I don't even know the man." Even swears down curses upon himself. Like, I don't know who this guy is. This is not who I am. And so denies Jesus three times. And I think that like, what's significant about that to me is that it's like Peter spent 3 years with Jesus, life on life, every single day in physical proximity with Jesus. And we get to this point and he still doesn't get it. Like right. He's just still right. Not there yet. And so, you know, I take a little bit of course, I don't ever want to deny Jesus like Peter denied Jesus, but there's a little bit of comfort in just that story for me where it's like, okay, however long I follow Jesus, there are going to be some times where I just don't get it.
You don't get it, yeah.
You know, and that's okay as long as there's repentance that comes later, which we talked about yesterday in the sermon. Is just like, yes, do you love me, Peter? Yeah, I love you. You know that I love you. Do you love me, Peter? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know that I love you. Do you love me, Peter? Yeah, Jesus. Like I told you three times. I get it. I love you.
Yeah, and I love, man, I love that scene in the book of John. I mean, it's almost like he did it on purpose, right? Because it's three denials, and then it's three questions of Jesus. It's, I believe, over a charcoal fire.
Yeah, that's exactly one of the things that's just crazy. The same exact charcoal fire smell that was around when Peter denied Jesus is the same one that they're using to cook the fish at breakfast whenever Jesus pulls Peter aside. And so he's bringing Peter back to that denial with everything, with memory, with like actual physical smell. And so Peter cannot help but remember, I denied him.
Yeah. And there's a cool aspect of that to me that Jesus is actually doing something incredibly loving while also being incredibly painful.
Yes.
Because he's walking back through, you denied me three times. So I'm going to ask you these three questions. But once again, it's not about Peter's success, perfect success or failure. It's Jesus's willingness to still reinstate him and come back and say, "Man, I still believe in you. You are a leader. I've chosen you as a leader. And so go lead." And man, he sure did, right? You read the book of Acts and he did.
Right. And even just the leadership style of Jesus in that moment to look past the mistake of one of his people and call him to something higher anyway. Right. Yeah. And so it's really easy, especially if you're the pointing finger type of leader, it's really easy to focus on, "I'm going to correct. But whenever Jesus corrects or admonishes, there's always a praise that's evident and there's always a call to something higher. And so
Adam said last week, I believe, in mentoring, you know, and we want to call you up more than we want to call you out. We want to call your life up to something better.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's what Jesus is doing as the servant leader that leads with open hands. He's not looking to call someone out in order to expose how terrible they are and how great he is. He's always looking to, you know, call them to something higher and better because he sees the character of that person or the potential of that person. So as you think through, like, you know, what you need to be doing as a leader is it's that, you know, you need to be calling people to something that's higher and better, even whenever they mess up.
Yeah. And I love that you kept saying the phrase an open-handed leader, because to me, an open hand is someone who's sharing, who is giving. You're not holding on like you know the closed-fisted to your resources or time or energy or whatever. And so I think even literally, in that moment, Jesus was literally open-handed, probably handing Peter some fish, that was just cooked. So like the literal, it wasn't just the metaphorical open hands. It was literally, here, I'm going to serve you some food as we talk, and let's, you know, we're good. Like we're going to, I'm going to reinstate you, so to speak. And you're going to be charged to go out. So literally open handed.
And that's a good point too, to take that even further and be like, when Jesus reinstated Peter, it was in the context of life on life relationship.
Yep.
Right? Like we are going to share a meal together. It's going to be an intimate moment. I'm going to serve you. And as I'm doing that, then I'm going to call you to something higher. And I think it's really easy for us as leaders, whether we're doing it, as you know, in the leadership of an organization or in the leadership of our home, it's really easy for us to, whenever we see somebody doing something wrong, just to say, hey, well, why don't you just come into my office? We need to talk. You come into my office. Mm-hmm. Or, even at home, just like, go to your room. I'll be there in a minute. Like, go to your room and we're going to talk about this. And it's really easy to exercise authority in a way that's non-relational.
Sure.
Right. And so one of the key things that Jesus does anytime that he corrects, especially in this one, is he makes sure that it's in a life on life relational setting. And as you're thinking through leading, you've got to make sure that you do that too. It's got to be in a life on life relational type of thing. Your employees are going to respect you a whole lot more if you step into their office or if you buy them lunch whenever you are, you know, praising them and correcting them and calling them to something higher, rather than just saying, my office, 5 minutes, let's go.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Yeah. This moment just popped into my head too, the scene of John 13 where Jesus once again literally is opening his hands to wet a towel in a basin and then wash one by one the feet of his disciples, these dirty, dusty, stinky, hairy, grown man feet, you know, 24 of them in a row, 24 feet in a row, and just the hands of the leader, right? They serve like Jesus served, literally open-handed. So when you think, just through your outline from yesterday, you know, to be an open-handed leader, you want a clear call, you want to develop someone, and then you want to commission them. Who jumps into your mind as someone who has kind of demonstrated that for you? And maybe it's three different people for the three different settings, or maybe it's one person for all three.
A lot of people jump into mind. I shared a story in one of our other episodes about Richard, my youth minister, who just like always gave me chances and opportunities and, you know, called me to something and gave me training and development. And then, you know, said, hey, you can actually do this thing called ministry. And so he pops to mind for sure. I think another one is Kevin Greer. Over back at Ozark, youth ministry professor there. And the way that he starts youth ministry class at Ozark is his very first thing that he'll say to any youth ministry major is, here's what your call is. You are going to be a world changer.
Yeah. I love that.
Like he's like, you are going to change the world. That's the call. Now let's develop, let's go through all of these classes in order to get you there. And then it really is, if you even think about my own contextual story, it's really him that started to make the dominoes fall for Corinth.
Sure.
Because after class one day, he pulled me aside and he said, hey, I know this church down in Georgia, and they need an intern, and you need to be the intern. And
yeah.
So then not even a couple of weeks later, a couple months later, you know, you and I are talking, and
then, right.
You know, the dominoes start to fall there. And so, Kevin, here's your call. You're going to change the world. Here's the development that you need. And then, hey, here's the place you're going to go. And, you know, it kind of works out from there. And so he was really instrumental as far as that goes. And especially even in the development phase, like at a lot of places, it's really easy to, you know, have this like, well, that's my professor, and I'm the student type of relationship, and there's a little bit like a distance there. But it wasn't that way at Ozark or really with Kevin at all. And I remember I bugged him all of the time with questions. There was this one time I was serving at a church in Joplin in their youth ministry, and it was a church in the middle of a neighborhood that was kind of impoverished. Mm-hmm. And so the students that they were bringing into church each week were students coming from a broken home. And it was really cool ministry, be able to share Jesus with them. But I remember there was one specific night that one of the 17-year-olds in the ministry, he came to church with this like completely obscene shirt on. a completely obscene t-shirt on, just a terrible, terrible t-shirt. And he's like in the sanctuary of the church with that. And like all of the people in the church are just like giving him these glares. And like, I was wrestling with it because I was like, I'm uncomfortable with him wearing that shirt here because there are other students who see that, but also like he's here, you know, in the presence Christ-like community and all that sort of stuff. And so, you know, I was wrestling with just in my mind, like whenever I am the youth minister, how am I going to handle that situation? Right. And so I like after chapel one day went up to Kevin and I was like, Kevin, here's what happened. What would you do? And he just looked at me and he said, change their heart before you change their clothes. And then he walked off and I was like, man, that's good. You know, so like
eight,
all that sort of stuff.
Words.
Yeah, I know. Like 8 words.
Ministry proverb right there.
Right. You know? You know, and it's just this one thing. It's like, okay, Kevin over and over and over again was looking to develop and train up even in a relational setting. He was always approachable. And that's like a servant leader. Man, if you want to take a principle away from that, servant leaders are approachable people.
Absolutely. You know, Kevin was also my professor in college a decade earlier. And man, love that guy. He's also my wife's uncle. So there you go.
Right.
Uncle Kevin is the best. But anyway, outside of that, just an incredible professor, incredible guy, youth ministry mind, and similarly, is actually my first year here at Corinth. We were doing a mission trip to Mexico, and it was at the height. A lot of our listeners might even remember this. You know, the height of the drug wars in Juarez, Mexico, and that's kind of where we were going, you know, for Casas por Cristo to build a house. And I was young. I was 23. I was not smart. I didn't have a family. I didn't have kids. I didn't know what that even was to, I couldn't, you know what it was like to be asked to send a child to a place where it was on the news. Like it was dangerous, you know? And so I remember I called Kevin and he gave me some incredible wisdom. He just said, you know, all of the pushback that you're possibly receiving or the questions or the concerns, it's because they're good parents. And I was like, oh, absolutely. Like I needed to hear that. I needed to be corrected. I needed that training from him. And, it changed everything for me on that trip. And, everything was, we still went. I was able to give really good reasons why we were still going to go because the drug wars were not close to where we were going at all. But anyway, all that being aside, the leadership lesson is for Kevin to just lean into us and speak some wisdom. And so once again, here we come back to mentorship, and it all comes back to the call, the development, the commission. Obviously that's ministry stuff, but I think of other areas of my life. I know you played sports a lot too. So coaches probably pop into your head. I think of, for me, I tell a lot of stories about Coach Lewis. For me, he was in high school, coached our soccer team, also our track team. And track was really his kind of bread and butter. He coached soccer, but we basically were a track team with shin guards, you know. But he coached track, and I think of all of that. Like, he clearly called us to what we were going to do. I remember, and this, he did this in track and soccer too, we gathered in his room. He was also the history teacher. So before the season started, we gathered in his room and we wrote goals on the board. We wanted this many wins, or we wanted to run this certain time in the races. And so the call was very clear. All right, so now what do we have to do to get there? He demonstrated proper running form, or, I mean, told us and showed us and all of that stuff. And then at the end of the day, you know, we were the ones running the race. So obviously he commissioned us to run the race. But I think of a guy like Daniel Lewis, you know, just a good guy who was a good coach, who believed in us, who called, demonstrated, and commissioned. So for listeners out there who, you know, most people aren't going to be in vocational ministry, but this transfers over really to being a dad, being a coach, being a boss. Just the call, the development, and the commission.
Yeah, anywhere that you have influence.
Yeah,
is
absolutely
what it is, right? So this whole series, if you have influence, you are a leader, and guess what? You have influence, And if you want to make the greatest impact with that influence, then you're going to follow the example of Jesus, because Jesus was the greatest leader of all time. And, you know, this book that we're opening up, Lead Like Jesus, is just this book that goes through just a lot of, here's what Jesus really did. And it gives some really helpful language and terminology to some leadership principles that kind of help walk our way through that. And so, yeah, if as we've been talking about these very specifics, you have forgotten what this all comes down to, it's that if you have influence, you are a leader, and you know you have influence, and so use that well to make a great impact and do it the way that Jesus did it.
Yeah, I'm glad you referenced the book. I got it open right here to chapter 22, The Work of the Carpenter. And I love...
Yeah, that was a fun chapter.
I love this. You know, he said, Evangelist Henry Drummond said, and he quotes this guy, what was Jesus doing in the carpenter shop? Practicing. And so I love... Then they made, references and comparisons to leadership and carpentry. And so I just wanted to highlight a few and maybe talk about
a few
of those.
If anybody's qualified to do that, it's you, because you are basically a carpenter.
I'm a very, very amateur carpenter. I know enough to get myself in trouble. So
there you go.
Man, there's so many guys here at the church, by the way, that are like miles and miles, light years ahead of me. And so I have called them and asked them for help. And that's a cool leadership too. Just once again, mentoring, even outside of, you know, ministry or life or whatever. It's just, hey, working with your hands has been a lot of fun for me to learn new things. A lot of guys around here at Corinth are just good old guys that can work really, really well with their hands. I'm thankful for them. So here's one. Good carpenters and good leaders must be able to envision something that does not yet exist and then commit to do what it takes to create it. So talk to me about how that phrase kind of hits you.
I think the first thing that comes into my mind is a story, and you helped me with this. This was back when Tristan and I were like first, we weren't engaged yet. So we were dating, and it was the first, it was her first birthday while we were dating. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, you know, I'm trying to court this really cute girl, and so I need to go all out with this birthday. And so she was mentioning over and over and over again how she really wanted a desk for her schoolwork. She's in PT school, and she really wanted a desk to be able to work and all that sort of stuff, but there wasn't really enough room in her bedroom at the time. And so, boom, idea. I'm going to figure out what it's going to take to make a desk that hangs on the wall, but then folds up so that she can use it when she's working, but then folds down so that it can be out of the way. And so that was the idea. I'm going to create that. Now, I had no idea what it was going to be to take that, right? So that's whenever I'm committing to doing what it takes to get it done, is I watched a lot of YouTube videos. I read a couple of design plans, and then I called my friend Josh, who knew better than I did how to make that happen. And so then presented that to her on her birthday, and all of a sudden, it's this thing where I propose, she says yes, we get married, and I think it's probably because I made that desk. You know, just kidding around. But yeah, that's like whenever you are thinking through your, this goes back to the conversation of last week, whenever you're thinking through the vision that you have, what is your ideal world, that's what you are thinking about. Like, so a carpenter is going to think, I want to make this specific thing, and I'm going to do what it takes to happen. A leader thinks, I want the world to be this specific way. And I'm going to do what it takes to make that happen. And so really, really cool, just the language between carpentry and leadership that is shared there.
Yeah, and you think about, Jesus didn't start public ministry, right, until he was 30 years old. So how long was he a carpenter? Well, the better part of those 30 years.
Right, I mean, like even back in those days, he probably started when he was really young.
Yeah. And so you think just all the lessons of just... Of course, there were no power tools or things back then, so things took longer. You have to have patience. You have to have just strength. You know, you're probably gonna get hurt and splinters and all that sort of stuff and grow through it. So, a lot of leadership lessons from carpentry, and there's a whole list of them here in the book. Let's just hit one more for now. Love this. Good carpenters and good leaders must be willing to be both lifelong learners and lifelong teachers. And that hit me because my dad is also a carpenter, and I got a lot of at least the interest for carpentry or just kind of building things. You know, like I said, I'm an amateur. We were joking before we hit record that this is just amateur hour when Adam's gone, right?
That's right.
So, no, in carpentry though too, I'm an amateur very much. So, but my dad kind of, I don't know, introduced me to woodworking and some of the tools and some of the terms that I would need and all that kind of stuff. So he's taught me a lot. And similar to you, I've looked at YouTube videos. I've also asked guys like, you know, Larry Kaloji and Jerry Dockery, just who are great carpenters, to show me things or help me with things. And they've been awesome. But then also I've been able to start teaching other people, as well, just a little bit, you know, and it's a great leadership lesson, transferable over to life and leadership, that you always have to be a learner and always be willing to be a teacher. Like, you never fully arrive. We're all growing. And so I don't want to steal your thunder later when we get to a leadership challenge, but how does that phrase hit you? Good carpenters and good leaders must be willing to be both lifelong learners and lifelong teachers.
Yeah. I mean, yes, you have to be, right? So the first thing that comes to my mind is just to take this back to Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we're leading like Jesus, then Jesus must have demonstrated this, not only in his like carpentry, you know, work, but also in his life as a ministry guy. And like, you think about like, okay, Jesus is literally the Son of God. Like, is there something that he needs to learn?
Right.
Probably not. You know, like he's God, and so he's all knowing and all that sort of stuff. And yet you still see Jesus taking time away to commune with his Father and to be filled by him. Right. And so if you even just take that, like, part of what you're learning is literally just being filled. And Jesus, the Son of God, who knows everything, still positioned himself with enough humility to be able to say, I know that I still need to be filled and I need to be helped, right? And so, yes, as a leader, you have to be that way, both in the aspect of I need to make sure that I am taking time with the Lord every day so that I can be filled, but then you add on some of this like actual leadership terminology to it as well. Like, you should be learning. Because things change, and you've got to be able to adapt to those changes. And yeah, I think I'll go ahead and give the sneak peek later when we talk through leadership challenges. I'll go into a little bit more detail there. It's just like, leaders are readers. And if you want to be a leader, you've got to open up a book.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. A lot to learn in leadership. We can always be growing. We can always be learning, books, podcasts, all that sort of stuff. But I think sometimes we might make it a little more complicated than it really needs to be. And I love this idea you had, what was it, last week, a couple weeks ago, you just asked the middle schoolers, what does it mean to be a leader? Is that the right question?
Yeah, just got a few of them together with one of our middle school leaders, and had them ask the middle schoolers that question.
Yeah, what so is, I love, you know, yesterday you started the sermon with one of the better ones there. It was just amazing. You know, you think about, here's a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old, and they're writing this piece of wisdom literature about leadership. It was incredible. Can we remind our listeners about what that quote was first, and then we'll go into some of the other ones?
Yeah, so the one that I shared yesterday was a middle school student who wrote, to be a leader means to be able to show the people that you are leading the right path to take and then guide them in a positive direction, right?
Love that.
You know what that sounds
leadership
like?
Gold.
It sounds like call, develop, and commission.
Exactly.
What that middle school student is really getting at. And so I thought that was really cool.
So there were a handful there. I'm looking at your notes right now. So read some of the other ones out. This is going to be fun.
Yeah,
middle schoolers on leadership.
Yeah, here's the best one. A whole index card. What does it mean to be a leader? To lead people.
It's a whole postcard.
A whole postcard. Three words.
Postcard.
You know, you talk about overcomplicating things.
Yeah.
That man is a simple man. You know what I mean? So here's another one. Another one that I thought was funny. If you are a leader, that means you are in charge of people you are leading.
That's great.
That's
straight
right.
Straightforward.
And then there's another one. What does it mean to be a leader? It's when you lead. Right.
Hey, that's pretty much like amazing. The first one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So then there's some other really good stuff here. One student wrote, it means for people to follow you and for people to look up to you. Right.
Like
and
that.
So love that. You're not going to be able to gather a following if you're not the type of person with character that's worth looking up to.
You know, I just also remembered kind of the leadership quote about people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they're getting at right there, too. They got to look up to you and know that you're in their corner. So, yeah, great.
Yeah, here's another one. What does it mean to be a leader? Middle school student says, a leader is someone who takes charge in a difficult time.
Ooh.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
It reminds me of a book that you and I both have read that we did kind of around the 2020 mark of everything being a difficult time. It's called Canoeing the Mountains.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Highly recommend that book. That's all about leaders who step up and take charge in the midst of a difficult time. Because here's the whole key of the book. You cannot canoe the mountains. And so,
but Lewis and Clark, that's the whole story. It was Lewis and Clark. They thought they were going to just canoe to the Pacific Ocean, and then they got a little farther west and realized, uh-oh, there's the Rockies.
Yeah, cannot use the canoe anymore.
But it was great. Yeah, it was great leadership lessons because they were having to adapt to situations they didn't see coming, kind of like, you know, back in 2020 where we all had to figure that out. And so yeah, for you leaders who may be facing some situations that you weren't expecting, that would be a great book to pick up as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's the specific word that comes to mind is just the word pivot, right?
So like, you've got Ross on
Ross when he's getting that couch up the stairs. Yeah. Pivot. Like that's a good leader. Whenever difficult times arise, they know how to pivot.
Yeah,
and
they
know how to pivot well. So good job, middle school student, who you didn't write your name on this, so I don't know who you are, but well done. here's another one that's really good, a little bit more lengthy. Being a leader, this means that you are helpful, kind and loving. This also means that you take time to help people. You lead people not while being bossy. This means that you help people in a loving way. You just are the first to show kindness and helpfulness in, I love this, in an awkward or difficult situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like the through and through this definition that this middle school student gives is like, you got to be kind, you got to be loving, you got to be helpful. Last one here from one of our students. Love this, and really the understanding of the gospel in this one. It says, being a leader means to be a good example for people who need Jesus. We can be an example of Jesus' light into the world that is broken and in need of grace. Isn't that good?
Yeah,
I
love that.
Middle schooler.
I love that.
Just love that.
It honestly sounds like scripture, you know?
Yeah.
And Colossians chapter 4? Talks about putting on Christ. And so putting on things like kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another. And if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. And then verse 14, Colossians 3, above all of these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. So, man, I love it. Middle schoolers on leadership, wisdom, that's great. So let's start to wrap up a little bit here and do a leadership challenge. So what would you say, just kind of put legs to this message you preached yesterday, what's a leadership challenge for our listeners?
Yeah, I think I hinted at what I really had in store already, and this it has a little bit less to do with just being the hands of the leader, but in the context of what we were talking about with the carpentry stuff, like you always have to be willing to learn. And one of the things that I was challenged with at Ozark was that phrase, that leaders are readers. And so, if you're not the reading type, maybe you don't actually have to sit down and, you know, like highlight what's in chapter 2 of this certain book. But the whole phrase just demonstrates this idea of like, if you want to be a leader, you've got to be a learner.
Sure.
And so open up a book, listen to a podcast that's better than the one that we do, because there are all sorts of other people that we listen to that have this ideas down. Open up some books. Here's a couple of good ones. The Canoeing the Mountains book that I mentioned earlier. There's another book by Clay Scroggins called How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, which was a really, really good book, especially if you're listening to this and you find yourself like in a position where you are under the authority of other people. Book is entirely about how you can be a leader whenever you're not the one who is like actually in charge of.
Leadership is influence,
right? Leadership is influence,
whether it's a title or not. So.
Super, super great book. There are all sorts of other ones. I can even contextualize it for like family life as well. Like, if you want to be a great leader of your home, then you should be reading and learning about what that looks like. So, quick shameless plug. We've got a class right now on Wednesday nights called Family Life.
There you go.
That's going to help you learn how to lead your family at home. There are books in our Next Steps resource room that you can literally walk by before or after church on Sunday, and you can go to a parenting section and you can pick up a book that's going to help you think through what it means to lead your family at home. And you've got to commit that if you're going to be a leader, if you're going to take people to this ideal world that you have a vision for, then you've got to learn how you can get them there. And so, pick up a book, listen to a podcast, do something that you that will help you as you learn and lead.
I love that. Leaders are learners, lifelong learners. I got kids, and I forget which one it was, but they asked me the other day if I go to school. And I was like, well, I did for a long time, and maybe I will again, get another degree or whatever. But I told them, like, I want to learn something every day. That's important to me, and like you're saying, whether it's a book or a podcast or a conversation with someone who's a lot smarter and wiser than I am, that's important. So as I thought through just a leadership challenge as it related to yesterday, the demonstrate while developing, that phrase really resonated with me, probably because of the stage of life I'm in. I got young kids, and so I just thought of the super practical, everyday things like sweeping a floor. Sometimes you ask your kid to do that. We're all members of the family. We're all important, but it takes a long time sometimes. And so sometimes it can be easy just to swoop in there and just say, let me show you how to do it, and then do it for them. Or cooking a meal, or folding the laundry, or building a project. And I think that the time is well spent when we slow down and demonstrate and sit or whatever with our children to make sure they're getting it. I mean, it's time well spent with them as well. Like just last week, this was a lot of fun. My daughter has an American Girl doll, and she wanted to build a dresser for it. And so I kept telling her, wait, because if we're going to cut the plywood and all that, we got to wait to get those tools out. And so we did. It was last Saturday, I think, and ended up getting them out. And we built it real slowly, but it's just this super cute little shelf that's in her closet so her doll can hang up the clothes or put the shoes in. And it was a slow process because we measured it together. I had her mark it, with the pencil, and then help me screw the screws in and all that stuff. But it was a lot of fun because it was something we did together. And hopefully she learned how to make the plan and write out the measurements on the paper, and then get the wood and measure it and cut it and carefully glue it together or screw it together, whatever. So demonstrate while developing.
I think that really just reminds me of this. I'll call this just like a leadership trap. Okay. So we always throw this phrase around. If you want something done right, then what?
Do it yourself.
You've just got to do it yourself. That's a leadership trap. That's not what leadership really looks like.
Right.
And so if you want to be a good leader, then you'll actually let people do it. Even when you know, or even if they do not do it the way that you wanted it to, or not do it the right way, you're going to let them do it anyway. That is what being a servant leader looks like. Don't fall into that leadership trap. Love that challenge, Josh. That's good.
Awesome. Well, we gotta wrap up soon, but not before some hot takes. All right. So, Luke, talk to me. Crocs are a must-have footwear item. That's the hot take.
No.
No.
No. They are not a must-have footwear item at all. Now, I have changed my opinion of that. So when I was in middle school, I rocked a bright orange pair of Crocs, and I wore them about every day. But they, because I was in middle school, started to smell really, really bad. But no, like, here's the thing. Just if you haven't caught on already to me in some previous episodes, it's that I do not like things that everybody else likes. Just to be a punk, I guess. I don't know where this really at. But like, Crocs have become this like mainstream popular thing, and I just don't get it.
Well, what about Hey Dudes? So Hey Dudes, let's go there. Hey Dudes are a must-have footwear item.
See, I don't think it's must-have, but like, I do have a pair because I think they're comfortable. Whenever I put the Hey Dudes on for the first time, what I told people is, I think that it feels like an angel is hugging my foot. Like, it just was that comfortable. But like, anytime you get to like must-have as far as footwear, it's like, I don't know about that. Here's what I would say. If we're going to do footwear must-haves, then I would say this. Have a pair of shoes that you can wear for recreation. Have a pair of shoes that you can wear for dress, like if you got a job interview. Mm-hmm. And have a pair of shoes that you can wear around the house, and then you're good.
There you go. So like, three is the maximum number of shoes that you should have, according to Luke Sayer. Here's a question. What's the most expensive pair of shoes you ever bought?
Ooh, that's a good question. I got to think about it. For me, what comes to my mind is just basketball and soccer stuff.
So for sure.
I played basketball and soccer a lot in high school. And so if I ever was going to, you know, splurge on a pair of cleats or basketball shoes for the season, that's probably what it was. I don't think that I've ever spent more than $120 on a pair of shoes.
Okay.
So some of those cleats and basketball shoes I would get on sale and kind of go that way. Now, the most recent pair of shoes that I spent some money on were a pair of running shoes. It's Brooks. Sure. Bought them down at that little running store in Monroe. And just my other running shoes were taking a beating, and I needed something that was comfortable to wear for a long period of time. And so I bought those. It's not because I'm a runner.
Disc golf.
Well, okay. Now we're coming back to that. Okay. That might be the most expensive. I think that I have spent like $130 or $140 on a pair of like really nice outdoor hiking / trail shoes. Cause that's typically what disc golfers wear whenever they play disc golf, is like trail shoes, because pretty much disc golf is just a hike where you play fetch with yourself.
you
hike through the woods and you throw your disc and then you go pick it up and then you throw it again. And it's the best time that you'll ever have. And if you want to come play, hit me up, and I'll teach you how to throw. And the moment that you start playing better than I play is the moment that I will commission you to go play with somebody else so that I don't lose.
Well, so I have never owned a pair of Crocs. I do not own a pair of Hey Dudes, but I did in college. Man, I'm a little embarrassed about this now. I saved up. It was my own money now. It's my own money. My own job at Sam's Club pushing carts. I spent $200 on a pair of soccer cleats, the Adidas Predators. I remember.
Predators are good ones.
Yeah. Well, I thought they were going to be awesome, and they're good. Obviously, I spent some money on them, but what I actually found was my $80 pair of Copa Mundials, the black and white
cleat ever made.
Just the basic. Like kangaroo leather, they were the best soccer cleats. I went straight back to them the next season, spent under half of what I spent on the Predators, and I never looked back. It was Copa Mundials ever since then. So
yeah, there's always that one kid on like a young soccer team who, you know, everybody on a soccer team, if you're just a young boy, to reference what you said last episode. Like, they're all about getting these like super popular and colorful and amazing cleats. And there's always that one that just puts on the black and white, not super sexy looking Copa Mundials. And usually that's the player that is the humblest, the best, and probably going to be the captain, because he doesn't care what his feet look like when he plays soccer.
They're just the classic shoes. All right, here's another one. Pineapple on pizza.
Yes.
Yes, I agree with
Absolutely.
That. Absolutely. I think the Hawaiian pizza is one of the best
Amazing.
Things that's
I, that
ever
is
been
what
made.
I prefer to order. And so absolutely, this is one of my favorite questions to ask students is, if you could be any pizza topping, what pizza
there
topping
you
would you be
That's
and
good
why,
question.
Right?
Yeah.
Pineapple is the answer for me, because how people feel about pineapple on pizza is there's no in between. You either really love pineapple on pizza or you really hate pineapple on pizza.
Yep.
That's kind of how most people feel about me. So I feel like pineapple on pizza. But then too, like, this is something that Your Pie down in Monroe or Loganville has done over the summer, is peach on pizza.
Ooh.
They have
a
pizza called peach prosciutto.
Uh-huh.
It is delicious, guys. So try all the fruits. Give me a pizza with a bunch of fruits. I probably will like it.
So Luke is plugging downtown Monroe. Go get your coffee beans that were freshly roasted at the camper, coffee camper. Then go eat at Your Pie.
And buy some shoes.
And then buy some shoes at, was it Winged Foot, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
So none of them are giving us any money for this podcast.
But they should be.
Last one, and then we'll wrap up.
We're going to have a word from our sponsors real quick.
Last one, and then we'll wrap up. Outside of guacamole, people really don't like avocados. What's your hot take on that?
I don't know. Avocados seemingly have become like kind of popular recently. And I think it's like, I think it's this like part of this hipster movement of, I'm going to live in California, I'm going to drink my Diet Coke, and I'm going to eat avocados for snacks. And
that's avocado toast, man.
Avocado toast is popular. Avocado is a very popular addition to sandwiches these days. And, you know, like, I'm pretty sure that people do like it. I do not.
Yeah,
like, I prefer not to eat avocado on my own.
Sure,
on its
and,
own.
I, and I think it's kind of like grits or something, where it's like, do they stand on themselves, or do you have to put something else on it? So I don't know. I like guacamole a lot, but a plain avocado with nothing on it, like, I got to put at least a little bit of salt on it.
Yeah,
I like
something.
Some of that. Yeah,
yeah. That's. I don't think that an avocado on its own.
Like, would you just peel the avocado and eat it like an apple?
I would like to meet a person that would do this, because I would not understand their thought process as to why that would be a thing that's okay to do.
All right. Let us know. Do you like guacamole, or excuse me, do you like avocados by themselves? Let us know.
Really, avocado, wrap this up.
There you go.
Because it's about time to call it. Got to work the puns in there.
There you go. Hey, thank you once again for listening, for liking, for sharing all the stuff. Thank you so much. It's been fun this week. And man, next Sunday, we will be back with part 4 of this series, Lead Like Jesus. We're going to invite you to be there, hopefully in person. We'll be there in person. If not, catch it online. And then next Monday, we will be right back here. Corinth in your car to recap the Sunday message, as well as a few more hot takes and just life stuff. But hey, it's been good. This is Josh and Luke signing out. Adam will be back next week with us after the college drop off, and we're looking forward to that. So Luke, any last words?
It is finished.
It is finished. All right. We love you. We like you, and we will see you next week.